Welcome to the Compassionate Leaders Circle podcast. For thousands of years, the sages have known that compassion is a powerful force for good. In the last two decades, compassion scholars caught up with these sages, proving that there is an ROI to building loving communities and businesses. This podcast features leaders who can teach us about the power of compassion. It is my great honor to welcome my dear friends, Deb Sass and Thomas Riemer, to our podcast today. They are the co-CEOs of an amazing organization called Space Hero. And we got to speak over a year ago and meet. And since then, they were recognized as honorees as Compassionate Leaders of the Year last year because of their great work. We recognize them particularly for collaboration because it's very rare that I run into co-CEOs that work so well together, and their mission and their love and ability to work together is why we recognize them. So welcome Deb and Thomas to the podcast.
Hi, Laurel. Thank you for having us all the way from a very sunny Ibiza in Spain.
Yes, and across the pond from Germany. Hi, Laurel.
Yeah, so we're representing three countries today, which is wonderful. So why don't you tell me first, like, where you're at now with Space Hero, and let's then go back to the journey you've had since we spoke last.
All right, absolutely. So it's been a while since we've spoken. And as you can imagine, on a journey where you try to achieve something and create something that hasn't been there before and that everybody calls crazy until it's reality, a lot happens every day, because we have to push from various angles. As Debs always says, we have to push a lot of stuff up the hill, and we cannot see the peak yet. And we cannot see the peak yet, you know, not because we know what the peak is. We can't see the peak because we don't know what the peak is going to be. And that, you know, is a testament to the endlessness of this journey. And it's exhausting in a way that because it is feels so endless, right? That true, real results are rare. Results where we, Debs and I, truly feel that we have achieved something, right? And that is hard on us for sure, and makes that journey really, really complex and complicated. But it's what it is, and we are carried still by the mission itself and by the people that are surrounding us, that are inputting energy into this every day and also into us every day, right? And this is really carrying us forward. And it doesn't mean that we are not achieving things. We are achieving incredible things. But again, you know, the journey is here probably more important than the end situation. And wise people always say that that's what it's all about. Just when you're in it, it's always hard to believe.
Yeah. Well, I get to speak to pioneers. And I think the secret about pioneers is they stick with it. You know, we often tell stories, whether it's in Forbes or other places, that seem like the overnight success, and the reality is a much different thing. So two questions for both of you. What have been the big wins over the last year or so? And how do you take care of yourself as leaders when you're being challenged?
Thank you, Laurel. It's an interesting question in regards to big wins, because when we last spoke, we were building a community by default, because kind of the world was on hiatus. Nobody could get on a plane. There were no events. There were no trade shows, no conferences, no in-person meetings. So I think to answer your question succinctly, the big win for us is that we have very successfully built a space community. And that space community is with not just the space agencies and government departments around the world. We're now in 67 countries. We have 168 letters of support. So basically it's like a Space Act agreement, but open dialogue for us and the space agency and the private space community in those countries. But we've also been able to put ourselves in a situation where that community has really bought into the mission. It's not about this crazy idea. And I love how you say, you know, people say to me all the time, how do you keep going? 4 years, you must be exhausted. And we're both exhausted, but the exhilaration of actually not knowing where you end up, but kind of having that goal that you want to go. What's the difference between us and everybody else is that we just don't give up. Like we just don't give up. We just keep going a little bit every single day. Persistence, consistency is how we say. So we've created a community that in some ways we haven't even leveraged yet, but that community is a space enthusiastic community. So they're leaders, they're professionals, they're the space sector. So not the consumers yet. We haven't even started speaking to them. Very much the business end. We also have an amazing relationship with the, let's call it, the only private company that can launch people into space outside of the Russian government. And that relationship is truly a remarkable one. As you know, when we first spoke to you, we had a great idea and we built something, but we weren't where we are today. We also are announcing several things at a trade event for the space industry in Paris the week after next. So there's a lot happening and we're still here. That's the biggest bit of news. We are still here.
Yeah. Well, let's for my audience, let's circle back a little bit on what the big idea is. So, and sometimes that shifts, right? So what's the big vision? Even though we don't see the peak, what is Thomas's and Deb's vision for the future?
The vision for the future is that you want to make the world a little bit more equal. That's like the underlying context of everything that we do at Space Hero. And what you see at the surface, it comes as an entertaining show that sends the winner into space on the biggest prize that has ever been given away in media. And why is that important? Because when you come from media, you understand that creating attention is the most important thing. And the biggest prize in media, $55 million that we give away, will create big attention. And that means that we are drawing crowds and audiences, not only who want to get that prize, but who also want to enjoy watching who is going to win. So you have your voting interactive element in there. And we are looking forward to doing this for the first time very, very soon. And we are looking forward to doing this not only once, but many, many, many more times after that. So it's a series. And people will be able to enjoy that on their mobile phones, on their screens, however they want to engage. It is global, which is probably a little bit different from the shows that you know, like American Idol, Survivor, The Voice, etc. It's always national, right? In our case, it's a global show because space is a global topic. Wherever you are, there are people that wanted to become astronauts, and then there are people that know about the stars and everything everywhere. And that is the big crazy idea. It's hard to put together simply because it is cost intense, and you need to convince everybody that this is still a good idea because it will be a great business. Debs and I, we are very commercially minded people, but we have an agenda because we both have understood that this project will have a lot of impact on a lot of people. And thus, we have to handle it responsibly. Responsibly. That's exactly. And That's the crazy idea. Yeah.
So to me, from when we first spoke, the vision seems stable. It seems very clear and very stable. And I think sometimes with leadership and persistence, that's really important to have something that you can stand on. I also appreciate that through hard times, you have each other, right? And as a solopreneur with one partner, me, I appreciate that you have each other. So talk to me a little bit about your partnership and how that works and how co-leading works.
Oh, that's easy. Thomas is the first person I speak to in the morning and the last person I speak to at night. I'm his work wife. He's my work husband. We literally speak probably more than our own partners would speak to us. But there's always that sense of he has there. And the reason why Thomas started with that word is English is not his first language. Even though he has a beautiful speaking voice, actually, he speaks English as a second language. So, you know, when he and I can kind of not relate because unfortunately, as an English person, I only speak English because you're not really encouraged. Well, not when I went to school, but to be able to co-lead and to really push an agenda that you both are super solid on, you have very different skills. Thomas is 6'3" and, you know, the long hair and the fabulous porn star glasses. And I'm 5'5", Indian, loud, shaved head, crazy glasses. Like we are very different in our ways we deal with people. And so Thomas is much more creative. And that really leads really well to a business because I am not as creative, but then sometimes my point of view on a creative angle can help him. So we sort of have this, it's like having, you know, your best friend, but also somebody who's the opposite to you. And it kind of works. Hey, it's been 5 years. We haven't killed each other yet.
That's pretty great.
So, yeah, but there's a second part to this question and to the answer to that, right? Is that it requires discipline, and I think that the thing that people most underestimate when they set up businesses or become entrepreneurs is that you have to be incredibly disciplined. We make it look easy because we always look like we're coming from holiday directly. We are working very, very hard every day, right? And luckily enough, what we work on is fun and entertaining and really keeps us there. It's not boring at all. Otherwise, we wouldn't have chosen it, right? But the discipline part is also part of our relationship, which means, and this is what I think we've learned in the last 6-7 months, that you do give your partner, you know, the space for their own things, right? That you respect privacy, because I can get very impatient. And when I want something and I want an answer, I want it now. And that can be very disturbing, because if the other partner is in a different space at that time, right, in his head, then A, you wouldn't get a good answer anyways. And B, it's annoying because it adds up. And then if you're on your journey longer, you have to have the discipline to just, you know, wait and find a good moment, find a regular moment that you can create together. And that's what we've done. We've gotten a lot better in that regards, and it makes us stronger.
Beautiful. Well, when you're done with getting all of us to space, you can write a book about partnership. I think that's fabulous. Because of what's happened in the world since we spoke last and all these privatized space missions with private people, I'm even more convinced and a fan of what you want to create. So talk to me more about the actual process and how you're going to give access to all sorts of people to this amazing process.
I love that question. I'll take the first bit and I'll let Thomas give you some more insight. But just talking from my own personal opinion, I think I may have mentioned on the last call, I didn't have the ability to go to university and get a degree. I don't come from an academic point of view. I certainly don't come from money. I grew up on a council estate in a rough part of West London. And the opportunity that this business and Thomas's idea has actually given me, and it's now some time ago because it's not an idea anymore. It's, you know, fully functioning multi-million dollar business. And we have, you know, 14 languages that are spoken just in our own internal admin team, which is quite superb. But the opportunity I look at when I was a kid, when I was growing up, when I wanted to be doing this or whatever, was that if we can make the space industry, which is only one part of it, which is the most inaccessible industry in the world, if we can make it more accessible, and little boys and girls around the world that aren't the smartest ones in the room, that didn't want to be or maybe couldn't be astronauts, that couldn't be astro scientists, mechanical engineers, if we can get to the other group of them and kind of get them excited and get them interested, and I'm sure I said this to you last time, if we can inspire 2, 3, 4 generations of kids to want to actually participate in something that was only ever available to really smart people, but in a different way. You know, maybe it's not being an engineer because you don't have the brains for it, but it's working with something else, a peripheral, you know, industry. Then for me, I know that's kind of, I don't have kids, I'm not really ever going to have them. But that would be a cool legacy. Like that would be a really nice way of, hey, this was an industry that, you know, that much of the world could ever participate. And because I had Space Hero, now it's this much of the world.
Love that. I can only agree to that like wholeheartedly, because it's about chances and access in everything in life. And we see the inequalities on this planet very, very clearly because we are traveling a lot. We do business in all parts of the world. And we have the challenges within our company, right? It is very hard to get people into one place because there is a visa issue, which means visa issues are only a mistrust that governments, you know, bring forward towards other governments because they don't believe that people will travel back. And it's a weird thing that Debs and I for sure will try to tackle at one point with our own foundation, so that we must strive for a visa-free travel on the entire planet. And the access is the thing that really is at the heart of this. How we are going to do this is by starting to provide it. If we start to provide one seat, there will eventually be 2, 3, 4, and then there will be 100, and then suddenly there is 1,000, and then you begin to really talk, right? And at one point, it will be normal for people to prepare for things like spaceflight and multiplanetary existence, which will require the best of us. It's not only, you know, the physical form. It's knowledge. It's being hungry and interested in new things. But then even if you are that and you don't have chances, that's brutal. So let's change that.
Even paying our staff, Laurel, which makes both Thomas and I so angry. I mean, we're giving opportunities to people in third world countries, and for the life of us, we can't figure out how to pay them. It is such a challenge. Okay, we have, obviously.
I have the same thing because I have interns in Korea and India.
Right.
Canada, and they all have to be paid different ways. I actually have to like
here and there and take it from this account. I mean, it's like it shouldn't be like this. We have a digital world that is so accessible to anybody. It shouldn't just be allowed to exist in the West. It has to be a truly global solution.
Yeah. I love that. I mean, I've been saying for quite a while that I'm a global citizen first and an American second. Mm-hmm. And I think that more and more people have to figure out global solutions. I mean, we are a global economy. If nothing else, COVID taught us that we're truly connected, right? There's no separation. If we want to pretend that there are boundaries, there are no boundaries.
Correct.
And, yeah, so that's a really interesting concept. I think at some point I'm teaching a course to high school students all over the world. And we had 9 countries represented. So there's probably something for my high school students to do with you all to support your cause. They could probably help us with this global, and they would get so excited about your project. So there's probably something to do there. So what is happening now, and what projects are you working on now?
Same old, right? It's getting this thing on the road. Yeah, it's our life. We don't do any other projects really because time doesn't allow. We don't want to because we want to see this through. But you said something very interesting. You said that you are a global citizen first and American second. And that is how we push Space Hero 2, because the application is exactly like that. The lowest common denominator is the mobile phone. Everybody has one, right? And from that onward means that you as an individual, you will apply to fly to space, and other people will look at you and say, wow, I want this person to fly to space because this is good representation for all of us. And when you look at the mechanics of a thing like that, then when you have 24 finalists, right, not every nation will be present. So you have to overcome your own, my nation first, and then, you know, somebody else second thing, because you will have fallen in love by then with a contestant that is not from your country. And we very much promote that because we are global citizens. Absolutely. Every challenge that happens to your country is a global challenge. And we see this more and more and more. So we should think of us being here for a global responsibility. We can keep our own individual cultural backgrounds, right? Like, I'm German, of course I am. And that means that I have certain Germanic attributes, all right? And that means that, yeah, I can be like that, but Germany as a nation is really not important to me because we are living in a context that is a lot bigger than only Germany. And, you know, the people in Europe have understood that kind of after the Second World War. So they set up the European Union. And now we are embattled because there are people that simply don't like that concept because it doesn't benefit the individual, but it benefits societies. And, you know, this is what we push. This is our agenda. It's the logical thing. It's old world versus new world. We are part of the new world where, you know, nation and these things don't play a role anymore, where you accept the individual and you accept the global responsibility.
Laurel, I want to ask you a question.
Sure.
Because you make a really good point. I'm not sure if I'm going to articulate it, but I hope that you can take out the crux of what I'm trying to say. So you talk about COVID really pulling us together. And in fact, however bad it was for individuals who lost members of their family and jobs and economic, social disappointments and dramas, fundamentally, COVID may have been something that has pushed us into thinking like a global citizen quicker than if it hadn't been there, which is a real shame to say. But I just talk specifically about Thomas and I. I mean, there was a time for 19 months that we didn't see each other physically. But we saw each other 10 times a day here, right? 10 hours a day, 5 days a week. We were like on call. We were talking to people, talking to investors, bringing in investment, all this kind of stuff. I look at something like the Kate Winslet, the new documentary that's just everybody's talking about, the Eating to Extinction. And it's come to me on my WhatsApp and on my social platforms from a dozen different people, totally different countries, right? Totally people. So all these people are sending me this documentary. And I haven't even seen it yet because I only got it last night. So I'll watch it. But what separates us from kind of going, I agree and I want to do something about it? Like, there's climate people and there's, you know, environmental warriors and there's vegans and there's this and there's all these like little causes. But hasn't COVID taught us that if we are to survive as as humanity, that we better work together on everything, that there can't be splinter groups, that is this a trendy thing to be a vegan? I don't know. Are we eating meat? I don't know. But if you take what I'm trying to say, it's like, when, and maybe space, look, I'm not trying to just push Space Hero, but maybe space being so mainstream, and they can't, okay, there's splinter groups with UFOs and conspiracy theories, but fundamentally everybody knows there is a universe, there are stars, you know, there is people in space at the moment, like that's kind of like a generic thing that transcends religion and what you eat and what your social or financial profile is. How do we bring that back to fundamentals? Like, did it really take a global pandemic for us to think of everybody else as pretty much the same? We fall in love, we fall out of in love. People will starve, people won't starve. People will get fat, people will be skinny. Like,
well, I don't know. I don't know. I love to be in the discussion. I don't really know what the question is, but I love the discussion. So I think the three of us are very, very lucky because we get to talk every day to people in other countries, right? Correct. And so we get to see every day that we're all the same, right? So I think any project, whether it's my class with kids with nine countries or your program that's going to bring the whole world together, anything that's a cause that brings us all together on a similar mission is a good thing. I think it's a good thing, you know, because it's undeniable that we're the same when you spend time with people that are different than you.
Right. Wow, that's great.
Oh, that's good.
Whether that's in your community or in the world, and that's why I love this project with these students, because there's kids in villages in India becoming friends and doing projects with maybe, you know, someone who's very wealthy in Korea, right? And everyone is the same. We're all global citizens and we have a mission. So I think, you know, sadly, we're in this time where people are hunkering down and becoming more tribal, or they're becoming more open. I think our role is to help people become more open and give access to things and people that they normally wouldn't have. I mean, I just really love, love, love your idea of democratizing space travel. Because there's two trends going on. There's all this elitism and, you know, I'm going to take my friends and people I admire into space because I can, because I'm a gazillionaire. And and the other trend is we need to have kids of different economic backgrounds, different cultural backgrounds, different countries interested in space and science and help, you know, they're growing up in an entirely different education system than we did, right? So we were labeled smart, we were labeled, you know, in my country everything was dependent on SAT scores, every country has a different system for university. They're living in a world where they have access to more information through their phone. They don't need to be a math genius because they will have apps to do math. Right?
That's right.
There's an app for that.
They have access to everything, including this podcast.
Which you need to listen to, kids.
Which you need to listen to, and you need to help us make it better. I think there is hope. I have a lot of hope because of the connectivity. Like, it's really, you can't say that you're, you know, I'm a Liberian only if your friends are in the US and India, right?
from that aspect, the world has absolutely become a better place already. Mm-hmm. It's very hard to remember that every day, because when you just open something and you get the news, it's always devastating, but that's the business. The communication between people and between people of different origin and background has absolutely increased million times than, you know, even 5 or 10 years ago. And that is a big achievement that, you know, we love that. This global conversation is what we live for. And you're right. The more you see how different people are, the more you understand that we're all human beings. And that is a wonderful, wonderful thing that you have expressed there, Laurel. And we see that every day as well.
Yeah. I mean, I think it all comes down to love, right? So even though we haven't spent much time together, I absolutely love you guys and what you're up to. And you're not Americans. And in my case, that makes you even more special to me, because I have more to learn from you, right?
And everybody should say that about everybody.
Yeah. And
the pandemic is an interesting situation, because you both said that some people have used it to become more tribal and some people have used it to become more open.
Right.
And I guess it's exactly the separation between courage and fear. And in a way, when you have something, when you own something like people in the West do, it's fear is stronger, right? Of losing that. If you own less, like people in developing countries, the courage is absolutely stronger. And we will see that in the applicants for Space Hero. Very, very clearly, people in developing countries and areas that we ignore or tend to ignore, right, will come forward and will want to make a difference in their lives a lot stronger than people in the West. And that conversation, I think we said it in the first conversation that we had, that conversation between those very, very different parts of this world will be fascinating.
I'm also struck by when you send all these new people to space, and basically you're sending new communities, new countries, new people of different ages, it's going to be very exciting. When they look at the Earth from space, there's no boundaries, there's no lines, there's no countries. It is truly, that vantage point is very powerful, because you can't really argue with we are one planet.
Correct.
Yeah, when you then look into the darkness. Oh, sorry, Debs. When you then look into the darkness around you, you'll understand that it would be a sad story if we wouldn't survive that, because we're also alone.
I mean, when I often think about the miracle that this planet happened, and how crazy and complicated we've made things as the inhabitants.
So true. So true.
Thomas has a great quote. Thomas.
The understanding space means understanding Earth. And that is true, because, you know, I only came up with that because, in reflection of the journey that we are having at Space Hero, it's exactly what happened. At the beginning, we were solely talking about space, but then we understood that it's far less interesting to people than their own planet. And whatever you do in space will have implications of the stuff that you do on Earth. And those implications and that impact that you create by going to space, by exploring for space, really, at the end of the day, comes back to how we live on this planet. And Debs and I, we found this fascinating. And you understand that the Earth needs to be at the center of all this, and then the rest will come.
Yeah. I mean, I really think projects like yours will prevent future wars.
Ah.
It will be impossible to have a war. As a global citizen, it's impossible to think of you can't have a war, because you're part of the whole planet.
Correct. Yeah.
Totally correct.
If only it had come out last year, then Space Hero would have made a bigger impact.
Yeah. I mean, a lot has happened since we've spoken, including the war in Ukraine, which breaks my heart every day, right?
Every day breaks. I mean, when it started, we were depressed for a couple of days, really, really depressed. But then you understand and you have to accept reality and what it is. And you know, apart from learning that people can be incredibly brave, like the Ukrainians are, it's like an inspiration every day. You also understand that we are far less safe and secure in the system that we have than we thought we would be. And that we have to be consciously looking at all of the achievements that we have generated over the decades. And really understand that if you need to, you know, defend them, you have to defend them. And I mean, you live in a country, Laurel, where a lot is at stake as well in this autumn. And people, you know, will hopefully make a conscious and well thought out decision.
Yeah, well, that's one of the reasons I moved closer to Canada. I may be a truly global citizen.
Very soon.
Very soon. Yeah, I am. I mean, I think I have a friend who's German who visited his family. And I think about like just your geography being so close to the Ukraine. Like, how is it for you to, it's sort of like if I was in Michigan and there was a war going on in Texas, right? It's very close. What is it like for you?
It's not relevant for my day-to-day being. It would be more relevant if we would be Finland or one of the Baltic states, which are really, really close, right? Or Poland. So for us, it's a bit removed. Plus, you know, we still have the warm, fuzzy feeling that we are part of NATO, right. Which might protect us. Who knows? But really, at the end of the day, it's about... the surprise was in that it actually could really happen, right? Because everybody thought it's impossible after World War II. Germany has an insanely strong history with Russia because Russia liberated us from the Nazis. And now they are, you know, kind of creating this counterclaim with the Ukraine as well. It's like, it's twisted. And it's not the twisted logic of a people. It's not the twisted logic of the Russian people. It's the twisted logic of a person.
Yeah.
And it is very, very clear. And I think the whole world has understood that. And that will make it very hard for a concept like this one to win. So I'm pretty confident that the achievements that we have made over the decades and that more and more people want to become part of will prevail.
Yeah. I just think that war is just outdated. Like it's, I'm surprised totally. It even works. Like, I feel like it's like, you know, I don't know. It feels like old technology that shouldn't be working, you know, but apparently it still does.
I shouldn't say that because we should be more specific when we do say something. There is a French philosopher whose name escapes me, but before you release this podcast, I'm going to give it to you. Okay. Who is writing about exactly that fact. When you create highly sophisticated concepts and you're advancing on things in, you know, your ethics and your thought process, and then somebody comes along that is just simply physically brutal and kills you, what have you achieved and how do you counter that? Brilliant books. He doesn't have an answer. I have to be.
I was going to say, what's the answer?
There's no answer. He doesn't have an answer, but he says the only thing that he can think about is that you have to learn how to defend yourself and you should never forget about that, which is kind of a so-so answer because we want to, you know, not deal with this stuff, right? We want to deal with great stuff, but here we are.
Yeah.
What's the real meaning of the word hippie?
I'm sorry, the word
hippie. What was the real, like, what was the actual meaning of the word hippie?
We have to look that up on Google. I have no idea.
I don't know the real one, but from I live on an island that was famous for accepting the hippies. And, you know, if you look at what happened in the 60s and 70s in America and in lots of the Western countries. So from my interpretation, it was about people who had means who chose to leave the system. It was never poor people that were like busking. It was actually people. So the Rockefellers, or part of the Rockefellers, who came to Ibiza in the 50s and 60s, they had an inordinate amount of resources, but they wanted to get out of the system. They wanted to get out of what the structure was that probably made them the money in the first place. And they wanted to grow their own vegetables, and they wanted to bake their own bread, and they wanted to have free love and sex and whatever. And it's like the hippie structure. I always say as a joke, I'm not a hippie, but actually both Thomas and I are, if that is the example of a hippie, are hippies. We got out of the corporate world. We both live on farms. We both grow our own vegetables. You know, I'm doing this podcast in a bikini because it's 89 degrees outside, and I'm going to jump in my pool when we finish this call. But my point is that we chose consciously to leave the system that we had grown up in. And Thomas only grew up in half of it, because for the first 20 years of his life, he was in East Berlin, which was communism, right? So you've got somebody here that had both systems and has flourished in maybe both. I don't know. If it wasn't for communism, maybe he wouldn't be as evolved as he is now in capitalism.
Yeah.
True. No, you're absolutely right. It's exactly that. Those experiences help us. And I love the analogy with the hippies, because that's who we are. And people always said that to us, right? Because they're like, oh, this is such a good project. And they mistake it for a charity, which it's not. You approach these things because you understand that commercial success is a measurement, but commercial success is a good measurement to measure the impact that you have with your own project. And that's why we are absolutely commercially minded, but we are hippies at heart. That's
I like being a hippie. I you know, spent my summers near Woodstock. So, you know, I guess maybe we become spaces instead of hippies. I like that. I'll join the movement. I'll become a spacey, because I do think your project has the ability to help people have community, grow something, grow dreams that are new. You know, we're not going to make everyone go to a farm, but I live off farm, organic farm. Somebody else grows them for me. There's something smart about being somewhere with water and food as we look at climate change. So I'm excited about what you're up to. I'm excited to be in this amazing conversation with you. I think we can bring it all back to compassion. So the way that we define compassion is preventing and alleviating suffering. And I know that the more people that are involved in your project, the more community they'll have, the more hope they'll have. And I do think projects like yours and becoming global citizens can prevent suffering in the future and bring more joy to the world. So thank you so much for being here. How do people get involved with what you're up to?
We are Space Hero on every platform.
Okay.
Thank you,
so
Laura.
Come be spaces with us. We are Space Hero.
Spaces, we are Space Hero.
Thank you so much for being with me today. I wish I was there to jump in your pool with you.
Thank you, Laurel.
Thank you, Laurel.
Thanks for listening to the Compassionate Leaders Podcast. You can learn more about us at CompassionateLeadersCircle.com. Please join us each week as we shine a light on compassionate leaders making a positive impact on their communities and the world.